It's a pet's life with Jim Dog, Ireland's first pet resort by Des the Vet, managed by vets, loved by pets. Daycare, vet care, premium pet food and grooming. Visit at petslife.ie.
And it is a, what day is it? Tuesday it is. Tuesday the 30th of April. Jez Groom joins me. Hello, Jez. How are you?
Hi, John. Great to be here today. Thanks.
Grand. Not a bother. So, generally, before we get into the topic of conversation, this time of year, you know, it's getting into, we were touched on it last week, heading into May now. Animals seem to be out and about more often. They used to out in the garden, out and about, going for walks, everything. Just they like the good weather as well, do they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, look, in general, the pet sector in Ireland is booming. You know, people mind their dogs so well, dogs and cats. And you know, we talk every week about how the shelters are full. But to be fair, there's a good demand for fostering. Lots of people out there willing to take in. My first appointment of the day this morning was a lovely little lurcher pup that had just been rescued, just come to a new family from the Dogs Trust. Every day we're seeing lovely new puppies coming into us, going into new families, coming from the dog shelters.
I was looking... Sorry, my microphone wasn't down up properly. I was looking at that before, looking at the ISPCA and then the local county equivalents of the ISP, the LSPCA, the KWSPCA, and looking at the various different ones.
Yeah.
And lurchers seem to come up a good bit. Why is that?
Well, you see, you have a cohort of people who are into hunting. Hunting rabbits and hunting with ferrets.
Yeah.
So we have a big population of these lurcher crosses. A lurcher is a kind of a slang term for a crossbreed dog that's a sight hound.
Right.
A sight hound is something, anything like a greyhound, that hunts by sight.
Mm.
So you have greyhound crosses and whippet crosses, and these are type of, they're generally smaller than a greyhound, generally look a little bit like a greyhound, a little bit like a whippet, and they're a small dog and they're very fast and they're used for hunting.
Mm.
And because of the numbers of them that are out there, there's an overflow.
Yeah, okay.
And the ones that aren't good enough at the hunting end up going to the pounds.
Okay.
End up being, we'll say, rejected.
They're a very affectionate animal.
They're lovely. So they make an ideal pet because they're quiet, they're calm, they're loving, they're gentle. And they don't need as much exercise as you think, you know.
Mm.
So lots of them there. Yeah, lots of them there.
There is definitely looking at them as well. And you were saying there was one just coming in, getting the one over. Was it just looking?
Getting the one over, getting his vaccination this morning. As I say, every day. Maybe the message is getting through. And less people are buying the expensive puppies out there. And more of them are going to the rescues. So long may that continue.
Is it a myth when it comes to purebreds compared to not purebreds that, you know, they're easier to manage, kind of the old-fashioned mongrel, as the man says?
Yeah.
There's less problems with them health-wise.
Yeah, well, you see, a mongrel is a kind of a nondescript, accidentally bred crossbreed. So I have to say, generally speaking, yes, those kind of accidentally bred crossbreeds are healthier.
Okay, why is that?
No doubt. Because it's a genetic mix. They're a hybrid.
Right. Okay, yeah.
So they do tend to be healthier. Now, what can go wrong is when you start designing a breed and mixing breeds together for a particular look, then you end up with new problems.
We've gone through that before.
New problems. Yeah. So that's the other side of the coin with regards to mixing breeds.
Where it's okay if it's a standard kind of two different breed dogs just get together and they produce pups.
Collie crosses and Labrador crosses.
Beautiful dogs.
The commonest type of so-called mongrel make lovely pets and they're very healthy.
Yeah.
But if you start mixing the ones with the squashed faces to make designer breeds, or you start mixing bully breeds and bull breeds and bull terriers to make them bigger or smaller or heavier or go for a particular look, then you end up with genetic disasters.
Okay.
Yep.
But the ordinary straightforward, I have to say, I do like the lurcher. I just see them floating around and I saw them walking with people, and people out bringing them for runs, actually. I see that a couple of times. People are going for a jog and the dog is coming in behind them and enjoying it by the looks of things as well, as was it naturally inbred.
Now, John, traditionally here in Ireland, we wouldn't have had the dog numbers and we wouldn't have had the kind of veterinary economy, in other words, the veterinary business, to the same level that there is in the UK.
Mm.
But that's changing. So way back before I started up in Kildare 25 years ago, I did my initial few years of experience in the UK. You had hospitals over there with massive facilities and massive opportunities to do almost human level vet care on dogs, because they had the population, they had the money, they have the population density. Ireland didn't have that scenario. at that time. Now we're looking at a situation here where we have more dogs, more people, a stronger economy, bigger demand for business. And to get to the topic of what we were going to talk about today, I suppose, future-proofing veterinary. Mm-hmm. What's happening now is we're catching up with the US, catching up with the UK, and you have these big hospitals out there, private investment often, who are able to put in the machines and provide almost human level care for animals. So it's an amazing thing that we're able to offer people the option now of referring for an MRI or a CT scan or dental x-rays, digital x-rays, all these kind of things.
If you were to look at the equine world at the top end before we could just talk about the general domestic animal, I mean, Ireland must be up there with the best vets in the world when it comes to equine.
On the equine side, no question about it.
Yeah, they have to be.
Yeah, and that's driven by economy because we have the best horses in the world, you see.
Yeah.
So then there's been investment in vet care and investment in people.
Right, that makes sense.
We're right up at the top of it on the equine side. A couple of top places on the Curra, Anglesey Lodge there, for instance, and Sycamore Lodge.
Yeah.
And down in Feathered, you have a good old classmate of mine, Ger Kelly, one of the probably the best equine surgeon in the world, based down in Cashel, Feathered, Tipperary.
Is that the reason why, would you think, and I know we're just off topic for just for 30 seconds, but would that be the reason why these international, I suppose, horsey people that maybe, you know, the Aga Khan, people like that come over, they buy up the studs because they want to get the best care over here?
The land is really good, you see. The land is ideal. The land and the climate is perfect for breeding horses in this country. The old tax situation that was put in place way back by Charlie Haughey with great vision, great foresight to create a bloodstock economy, that worked really well. Okay. So now we have the best people and the best horses and the best land for horses.
Okay.
And the knock-on effect of it here is, you see, Punchestown this week, where it's such a boon to the local economy. It's really important.
It is, yeah.
And long may it continue.
Absolutely.
And so the bloodstock sector, the equine sector, in terms of its importance to the Irish economy outside of Dublin, right, it's vital to the rural economy.
Okay.
It needs to be really, really, really minded and protected.
Okay, so bring it back a notch or down towards domestic level as well. So you were saying, like, future-proofing, I think, is important.
Yeah.
What's the veterinary situation now compared to what it was even a decade ago back?
We're massively way ahead in terms of our capability, in terms of the level of investment that's been put in there into the veterinary sector, but sometimes by capital funds, by investors, and sometimes by private, you know, younger vets and their families building these beautiful hospitals. For instance, a privately owned, modern, ultra-modern, state-of-the-art, world-leading hospital in Summerhill, County Meath, owned by, you know, one family, a group of young vets together.
Okay.
Yeah. And even in the Kildare area, you have places with all the facilities who have put in the investment.
Okay. So stuff that we used to say take place 10 years ago or 20 years ago, whatever, regarding vet care.
Yeah.
What's the top two or three things that you think has helped the veterinary industry grow so well over the last decade?
Well, facilities
were
the biggest thing. Right, the facilities. That level of investment means we have digital x-rays. Like, even hospitals like mine in Kildare now, we have blood testing capability. 20, 30, 30,000 euros invested in blood testing capability in-house. The same level of investment in digital radiography. That's computerised x-ray in-house.
So if somebody comes to your place, for example, and I'm just using you as an example, and you need to do bloods, you do them yourselves.
Yes.
And do you test them yourselves? Or you send them off to be tested?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's terrific.
The thing about it is, right, we don't have any government support. There's no HSE behind us.
Yeah.
So we have to step up. And if we want to work to a certain standard and take pride in our work, so we make the investment and we provide the facilities. So people ask, oh, why do you charge so much for blood tests, or why do you charge so much for x-rays? That's why. It's because we've stepped up and we've put the money in ourselves and we've bought the equipment and we have it there. And there'll be a couple of places in Newbridge, a couple of places in Kildare, a couple of places in Naas that have
Plus
that level of investment.
Your turnaround will be a lot quicker and you get the diagnosis a lot quicker.
Diagnosis in this and treatment on the same day.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, look,
90% of that is probably all okay.
Ultimately, in the medical field, of course, doctors are further ahead of us in terms of their expertise and in terms of their margin of error. But we still have a level of efficiency and turnaround that the medical profession wouldn't have.
Mm.
Yeah, because we're there and we're private sector and we're hands-on. Okay. Yeah. So the future-proofing side of it, yeah, it's down to the fact that we have that level of equipment. There's a dark side to it, which is worth mentioning.
Okay, go ahead.
Because in the UK, what's going on at the moment is big controversy, big debate about the cost of vet care.
Mm.
Now, reason for that is that particularly in the UK, the whole thing has been taken over by finance, by hedge funds.
Yeah.
It's been corporatised.
Right.
It's been invested into by accountants.
Okay.
And they're putting all the machinery into these places and then they want a return on
obviously
the money.
It's a business investment.
Yeah. And you have younger vets there, you see, are delighted to do the work to provide gold standard care.
Mm.
But the dark side of it is the cost of that.
Okay, right. Fair enough.
So, I would say we here in Ireland, us vets in Ireland, we have a different approach to it. We're more context-based.
Okay.
So, by that I mean what I would call tailored.
Mm.
So you come to a small practice like mine, Kildare Vet Surgery, or any family-owned business, independent practice, and the option of providing that five-star care, gold standard care, yeah, we have that option for the people who have an insured dog,
mm-hmm.
or the people who are able to and willing to go all the way, as it were, in terms of all the testing and referral for all the testing and referral for all the treatments. That's what we call the gold standard care. But at the same time, behind that, we have the experience to know when gold standard is not suitable or not required or not affordable.
Yeah.
And if and when gold standard care is not affordable, I would like to think that we always have the experience and the insight to tailor vet care to the owner and the dog.
Well, that makes sense.
In other words, to look at everybody's circumstances and look at the dog's circumstances. Simply what I mean is, right, a couple of those horror stories from the UK that have been in The Guardian in the last week.
Yeah, saw them.
Yeah, 14-year-old dog went in on his last legs, had a tumour, right, £2,000 to £3,000 worth of tests. Ultimately, the poor dog ends up being put to sleep.
Yes.
Now, to me, that would be irresponsible vet care.
Yeah.
In my view.
He should have been put down immediately.
Yes.
Regardless.
Yes.
For the sake of the dog, for the sake of the family.
When I'm talking about tailored and context-based vet care, mm-hmm. I could say to people reading that, you can rest assured that's not going to happen in Kildare or mm-hmm. Newbridge or Naas. I think there's a level of experience and insight and we would look at the circumstances and we would be able to use a little bit of common sense and a little bit of empathy and a little bit of compassion and extend that compassion to the dog's owner and to the dog.
Okay, Mary was on. She says, love the conversation. Thanks, guys. You mentioned advance in technology going forward, but dogs can't speak back. How do you get the diagnosis? Good question.
Well, veterinary diagnosis, you see, it depends on a combination
of... Is it a process of elimination to find the result?
Yes. So what we call differentials, diagnostics, there's a ladder in your head of the things that are most likely at the top and the things that are least likely at the bottom.
Okay.
And we're able to rule things in or rule things out on the basis of, firstly, clinical signs. Secondly, on the basis of history, the questions we ask the owner. And thirdly, on the basis of some tests.
Right.
But if we're responsible, as I like to think we are, and we tailor the amount of testing we do to suit the animal, then you're not spending money and time on tests unnecessarily. You're only doing the tests that are going to give you relevant and valid information.
Okay, and that does make sense as well. You know, when it comes to the hardcore diagnosis of a terminal illness or something along those like, has that progressed to where it was a decade ago back, as in getting the result right and getting the diagnosis correctly?
Yeah, because, okay, so say you have a younger dog with a tumour.
Yeah.
Or of some type of a cancerous condition.
Hmm.
So those dogs now can have MRI scans, they can have CT scans, and then they can have radiotherapy or chemotherapy to extend the lifespan.
Good stuff.
But again, when I'm talking about context-based or tailored vet care, be sensible. Don't put a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old dog through that process. It wouldn't be fair.
No.
Mightn't be justified on the basis of quality of life
because
to do that.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well, because on the context of it, if you're to multiply by the traditional 7 years, a 10-year-old is kind of two-thirds of his way through his potential lifespan.
Yeah, yeah. So sometimes with senior dogs like that, when they get to 10, they're kind of a senior dog. Now, a 10-year-old terrier might be only at the start of his old age journey because his lifespan could be 16 or 17, mm. right? But a 10-year-old Rottweiler or a 10-year-old Ridgeback or a 10-year-old German Shepherd, he might be quite elderly.
Okay.
So we have to tailor treatment on the basis of what's the dog's quality of life, and what's the dog's life expectancy going to be.
Okay, so that's advances in technology. What about new treatments and going forward and where we were, again, going back
yeah.
to where we are now? Because there always seems to be a development and there also always seems to be getting updates.
So there's great stuff we can do. So say our dog or a cat comes into us with a simple enough infection.
Yeah.
Now, if that dog is not amenable to treatment, owners can't get a tablet into the dog, owners can't get a tablet into the cat and so on, right?
Yeah.
We have antibiotic injections now. Yeah. Simple thing, an antibiotic to treat an infection. One injection can last 10 days.
Okay.
So we have drugs now that where there's convenience there.
Mm.
So if compliance, in other words, you getting the treatment into the animal or the animal taking the treatment or whatever.
Okay, is there such thing as animals that are allergic to antibiotics, like humans?
Very rarely.
That makes sense as well.
The other one there, another nice one, eardrops.
Yes.
All of these dogs out there that suffer with eardrops and eardrops and eardrops. And we feel sorry for that when the ears are very sore, very tender, and you're having to put the drops in day after day after day and put the dog through the pain and the inconvenience of having the drops put into the ears every day. Now there's a new one that lasts 10 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, treatment called Osernia, and another one, name escapes me, 10-day treatments.
I think this is a huge improvement.
Huge improvement.
For the simple reason is animals hate when people are messing around with
yeah.
their, you know, whether it's forcing them to take a tablet, putting something into their ear. So
yeah.
if it only takes one dose to get the end result, that's a huge plus, isn't it?
See, the whole thing is outcomes of infections and outcomes of diseases in animals are affected by how good a patient the poor animal is. So if the treatment is going to stress out the animal too much, then oftentimes it's counterproductive. So these newer treatments where there's less interference and less frequent administration are more effective.
Okay.
So the 10-day ear drops, fantastic, just a once-off. The 10-day antibiotic injection, fantastic, just a once-off. The spot-on flea and worm treatments that just go on the back of the neck.
Brilliant.
Brilliant treatments.
Brilliant treatment.
Brilliant treatments. There's another one. There's an osteoarthritis injection for the hip dysplasia and spinal arthritis and the likes. Instead of daily medications, you just give a once-off, once-a-month injection.
Yeah.
Brilliant treatment. Dogs with really bad allergies, instead of the daily tablets, there's a monthly injection.
Yeah, I think this is the key to it now, because a month, an injection that'll last a month is better than a daily, here, put this into the dog's food or cat's food. There's no way in hell when they suss it, they're going to take it.
You
unless
see,
you literally have to hold their throat.
Yeah, a lot of them don't like it.
Yeah.
And if you haven't started or gotten a puppy used to swallowing a tablet from a very early age.
Yeah.
So one of the things that definitely affects outcome.
Yeah.
Is the compliance issue, whether they will take the treatment or not. So the monthly injection for arthritis, Librela, that's a brilliant one and it's brand new. The monthly injection for allergies, Cytopoint, that's a brilliant one. Mm. And there's another one for dogs that are prone to picking up ticks and fleas and live in the countryside and everybody's worried the whole time about the dog scratching, picking up fleas, or there's a turf shed and the dog is constantly picking up mites from the fuel shed, turf shed, coming out in June, next 2 months' time. There's an injection called Bravecto, which is going to be a once-a-year injection for the repellent prevention of fleas and worms.
Okay. Two quick questions. One, is it a good idea to give dog the equivalent of human... Sorry, it's gone back. Oops. It's after refreshing. Vitamins. So, vitamins, as in, you know, vitamins, like humans take vitamins all the time. Do dogs take and cats take vitamins, or is it just certain types of food that you give
them? There's different ones. You're better off asking your vet and using doggy animal grade ones because they have different needs. They don't need the same level of vitamin C as we do.
Okay.
They don't need the same levels of vitamin A.
Just a diet, basically.
Or vitamin
a good
B.
diet's better than maybe vitamins. It is.
Well, oftentimes the extra vitamins are in the diet. One interesting thing about all animals, they need much more omega 3 and omega 6. Which come from fish oils and various other types of oils. They need much more of that than we do.
And what do you get? Okay, so are you talking about the liquid form of fish oils?
Yeah, so dogs with bad skin, for instance, and prone to hair loss and prone to dry skin, they need omega-3 and omega-6 fish oils added.
Okay, very good.
And you can get animal-grade ones that have the higher levels of omega-3 and omega-6. They have a very similar vitamin and mineral requirement to humans, but they need different levels of it.
Yeah, okay, brilliant stuff. Tom was on, he wants to know, can a dog with liver cancer be cured?
No. No. Treatment and management. And maybe
managed.
Treatment and management, and perhaps extension of his life with the right supplements and the right treatments and the right diet.
Yeah.
But ultimately, that sort of a problem, hepatic carcinoma maybe, is what he's talking about.
Yes.
It's going to boil down to a quality of life decision, a quality of life assessment.
Yes.
And the real key thing with these dogs is, as long as they're eating, they're okay, they have a quality of life. But when an animal goes off his food, then you have, that means to me, you see, if they go off their food, there's nausea, they're miserable, they don't feel great. If they don't want to eat, that's a real key indicator that the quality of life has gone.
Okay, right. And I suppose if they do have a serious disease like that, I suppose it's the same with anybody or anything or any animal. It's the same processes are coming on board there, Tom. So thank you for your question. Future-proofing for the next 10 years, what are we looking at?
You're looking at more of these convenient treatments.
Yeah.
There'll be more longer-term treatments. We'll be given a monthly injection along with the vaccination every year to prevent fleas and worms. Mm. That's what's going to come in the future. We'll be given these arthritis injections. They'll get stronger, they'll get better for older dogs, no doubt. Multivitamin injections where the acids and the oils are in the injection. That'll come as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Seems to be the way forward. And
the scanning. The scans and all the rest of it are out there. You can spend any amount of money and go to the same lengths to treat an animal condition, an animal disease, as you can for a person. But the only thing is, it has to be context-based. It has to be tailored. You have to apply a little bit of common sense and say, at what stage is this treatment justified or affordable or worthwhile, and what stage is it not?
Okay.
So there's a couple of tips I'd give to people, dog owners, cat owners, particularly if your animal is chronically very sick and you've had to come to terms with the fact that you're looking at maybe a terminal diagnosis or something that's not curable, okay? Something I would say in those situations is, if your animal is not insured, do ask your vet to spend your money on treatments rather than diagnostics.
Mm.
That'd be one key thing. Spend your money on treatments, not diagnostics, right? And secondly, ask them, are they going to apply gold standard care, or will it be context-based care or customised care?
Okay.
In other words, that gives your vet a licence and understanding that they can work with you and what's appropriate for you and what's appropriate for the animal. Because a lot of the time in these bigger places, they will be applying gold standard care because of fear of litigation.
Okay, that makes sense as well. Now, Deirdre was on, just a quick question. She just wants to know, with all this new advance in technology and new treatments going forward, will it help with the life expectancy of your pet?
Everything already is helping with the life expectancy. Oh yes, indeed, no doubt about it. Sometimes it's hard enough to put all of these measures in place, but if we get in the 9, 10, 11-year-old dog, maybe with a minor ailment, into the clinic for something small, it's an ideal opportunity to talk about a management plan that'll help the dog live longer and have a better quality of life for longer.
Mm. Okay, an honest question for an honest answer. Des, can you explain to me why generally vets are expensive? Most people can't afford x-ray scans, operations, things like that on their pets. What are they supposed to do if they don't have the money? How can it be helped? How can you help out?
There's nearly always a way to put a treatment plan in place to safeguard the animal's quality of life without having... Well, it's a little bit like the stable doors closed after the horse has bolted.
Yep.
If your dog is sick and he's not insured, it's too late to insure him.
That makes sense too. It's like a human.
But okay. You should be insuring them as puppies. Yeah, you should.
Yeah.
The way to avoid trouble like that is insure them early. Secondly, if you do find yourself in a scenario where you're looking at big bills, some practices will be able to offer a bit of a treatment plan, an installment
plan.
Spread
it out.
And some won't. That'll be one way of doing it. And thirdly, do ask your vets to spend the money on treatments rather than diagnostics if your finances are limited.
Okay, that's a very, very good top tip as well. I have a 13.5-year-old Westie. She has suddenly developed a skin issue on paws, gums and the backside area. Very red and itchy. She got a steroid and anti-itch injection. It worked for only a few days, but now she's back eating the foot again and dragging herself along the ground.
Okay, that's because it's an allergy.
Okay.
It won't just go away. Unfortunately, the one-off injection would have just given temporary relief.
Yep,
so... Give your vet a buzz and go back and put a long-term plan in place, because I would say your Westie's probably going to need a change in diet.
Yeah.
That's a big thing with those allergies. Almost always there's a food hypersensitivity involved in that. And secondly, your dog, unfortunately, the bad news is your dog probably will have to stay on an antihistamine type tablet or injection going forward.
Okay, right. Here's another one after tropping in. Just as we said, it was the last question. Three more come in. Can you recommend the best food for a 5-year-old Golden Labrador? The food Charlie was on but is discontinued, so need to sort him out as ASAP. He's not too keen on the replacement. He's walked daily, good 3K or more, but he's getting a bit chunky these days. Thanks a million, says Maria Martin.
Okay, have a look on our website, listener Maria, at petslife.ie. The Gym Dog brand is ideally suited for those active working breeds.
It is indeed, yeah. Yeah, proof is in the pudding, because I know a lot of people have said they've tried it out and it's really made a huge difference to their life as well. And just as I'm about to go, another one drops in. What can we do now when our dog is young to increase the life expectancy of our dog in the future?
Yeah, the old four-legged plan: diet, exercise, socialisation.
Simple, straightforward.
Yeah, it is. And regular preventative vet care.
Listeners, thank you very much for all your questions. Do me a favour, next time, get them in earlier, will you?
Hi, John, thanks.
That's okay, no problem. Des, back again next week.
It's A Pet's Life with Jim Dog, Ireland's first pet resort by Des the Vet. Managed by vets, loved by pets. Daycare, vet care, premium pet food and grooming. Visit apetslife.ie.